It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
Home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM
and 1160 AM.
Welcome on in to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. Happy Saturday to all of you out there. It's Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. We got a jam-packed show for you today. It's another game day for BYU basketball as the Cougars get ready to take on the Pepperdine Waves tonight. 8 o'clock tip, 7 o'clock pregame here on your legacy home of the Cougars, KSL News Radio. But before then, we're going to have Tyler Haas preview the game coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. And then later this hour, former BYU tight end Matt Bushman, who's pursuing a career in the NFL, he's going to be joining us as well. So bringing in Matt Biamonte here. Matt, it's going to be a loaded show as always here on the program.
Can't wait to talk to Matt Bushman. Can't wait to talk to Tyler Haas. And as always, with the NFL, Mitch, nearing its completion after this weekend, we'll know who's in the Super Bowl. We'll kind of talk about that well as there's some BYU presence still in the Final Four of the NFL playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun show. If you want to be part of this program with us, feel free to text us at the UCCU KSL text line 57500. Text BYU to 57500, and you can be part of the special BYU text group we have with KSL, and then also tweet at us at KSL Sports, Mitch underscore Harper, and Biamonte Matt. But we're going to start things off with some NFL draft buzz regarding Zach Wilson right here in the leadoff.
The leadoff. A look at the stories making headlines right now. It's time for the leadoff on Cougar Sports Saturday.
Yeah, one of the top NFL draft analysts, Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network, he's kind of their new Mike Mayock. Since Mayock went to the Raiders, became their GM in Las Vegas, Daniel Jeremiah stepped in as the draft guru for the NFL Network, and he released his first NFL mock draft of the 2021 season. And Matt, he's got Zach Wilson going number two to the New York Jets. You buying this? You like this move for potentially Zach Wilson to the Jets?
I'm buying that it's a possibility, Mitch. I hate the move, though. I know that the Jets have shaken up the coaching staff. They bring over Robert Saleh from the 49ers, and he hires their offensive coordinator, Mike LaFleur, to run the Jets' offense. And here's the thing. That sounds great, and it might work, but history shows, Mitch, that the Jets aren't a good franchise. And until they otherwise, that's not a place that I would want to go if I were Zach Wilson. I want to go somewhere where it's a little more established, that you feel like there's a good culture there that's going to help you overcome that. And look, Zach Wilson is ultra-talented, Mitch. He had an incredible season. I think he's going to be successful in the NFL, but there's been many a talented quarterback that have went to the Jets and have not panned out. And I just would rather see Zach go to a place, Atlanta, Miami. If someone can trade up, San Francisco would be great. Just a more stable franchise. Because there's been so many good quarterbacks that have been drafted over the years that find themselves in a bad situation and it doesn't work out, and I don't want that to happen for Zach Wilson.
Yeah, you can go on KSLsports.com and read a roundup of some of the mock drafts with Zach Wilson. Again, Daniel Jeremiah from NFL.com has Zach going number two overall, where do you think Zach should go? You can text us at 57500 on the UCCU KSL text line. I think that the Jets would honestly be a great spot for Zach because of that coaching staff. My only concern with the Jets, honestly, is the market. I think that media is not like Salt Lake, where here in Salt Lake, I feel like we kind of play a little bit of softball at times. And especially at college athletes, I mean, they don't deserve to be going through the coals if they're doing things on the up and up. And Zach Wilson was a great guy at BYU. But in New York, it's going to be, if you have any sort of weakness, any sort of volatility, they are going to ride you to the end of the earth. And New York media, they run a lot of people out. And I think that's just a difficult climate to be in. That, to me, is why I would not like to see Zach go to the Jets. I think that coaching staff, though, with Sala there, coming from San Francisco and getting LaFleur from that 49ers staff, I think that makes a ton of sense. And I think, honestly, Zach could go in and make the Jets better. I think Sam Darnold would be a player that they could stick with, and I think he's still a good player, but I think Zach Wilson can be a better quarterback than Sam Darnold in the NFL. I just think that market, being in New York, those media members, that is just a difficult deal where it's 24/7 all the time. You are going to be under the spotlight more than pretty much any other market. It's the biggest media market in the country, right there with L.A. So that, to me, is why I would not like to see the Jets. But I think with that new staff, I'm more on board with it than I was before when they had Adam Gase.
Mitch, a quarter of the league turns over their coaching staff every year. I like the hire. It's just history says that there's only going to be maybe one or two new coaching hires this year that pan out for longer than 3 years. And I'm not convinced it's the Jets. It might be, but the Jets have shown over the last 10, 20, 30 years, it's not a well-run franchise. And then if you look at the football players on the team, there's not a lot of talent. They traded their best player last year to Seattle. They've got the picks, which is great, but it's going to be hard in New York. And can Zach overcome that? I think he can, but as I mentioned previously, there's just a lot of great prospects that have come out in the league. They go to a bad spot with not a lot of talent, and it doesn't pan out. And then their career, they're working behind the eight ball to revive their career. And I don't want that to be the case for Zach, which is why I just hope the Jets take Justin Fields, and then let's see what happens with Zach Wilson. If it's Miami, that's an unbelievable fit. If it's Atlanta, they've got way better talent on the offensive side of the football than the Jets do. And then if he passes those couple teams, then you're looking at trade-up opportunities, and anyone who's trading up is a much better football team than the Jets. So I under any circumstance, I do not want it to be the Jets. Anybody but the Jets is kind of where I stand for Zach Wilson in the upcoming NFL draft.
I just don't think there's been many great quarterbacks that have actually went to the Jets. I mean, they had Brett Favre that 1 year in 08. They had Chad Pennington, who was decent for a few years. Vinny Testaverde and all those guys had success there. I mean, outside of that, though, it's been, Mark Sanchez? And he even had some success. He got them to the playoffs. Geno Smith, Fitzpatrick, Josh McCown, Bryce Petty, Sam Darnold. I mean, there hasn't been really many careers that have gone to die in New York. I mean, Frank Reich back in the day in the 90s, Boomer Esiason on his second leg in the late 90s. But honestly, I think that Zach can go in there and rewrite the narrative, because I think that it's a nice situation to have a clean slate where everyone, a new coaching staff, they're going to at least get, I think, at least 2 years, at least, where they're going to have support. And unless it becomes just a complete disaster, I think it probably 3 years is more realistic that they get to try to have success. And I think that's a lot of time to prove yourself. And I think that could be a good situation. I just don't like the component of that New York media spot, because I just think that can ruin a guy. But honestly, I look at the list of starting quarterbacks that the Jets have had. They just had bad quarterbacks. Zach Wilson's better than a lot of those guys. I mean, Geno Smith, he was horrible.
Well, he's better than them now, but coming out,
Geno Smith was a second-round prospect.
Sam Darnold, I think Sam Darnold was revered as a much better prospect
than
Zach Wilson
when
he came out. Whether it's true or not, that's just a fact, and that didn't work out in New York because he had a mess of a head coach and a disastrous front office, and now there's a new regime there. But there's no guarantee that the Jets are gonna change their fortune. I mean, if history is to tell us anything about the Jets, it's that it won't happen. Yep. And so can he succeed in New York, Mitch? I think he can. I think he's got that kind of talent, and he has such a good presence with the media. I'm not too worried about that. I think he'll handle that well, and Jets fans will love him. It's just when you're talking about a guy who's coming to the league and there's a plenty of opportunities, I want him to go to a place where he can be plugged in. There's talent. I don't want Zach Wilson to have to bear the franchise immediately day one with not a lot of talent. That's hard to do for anybody.
Yeah.
And so if he can fall down to 4, 5, 6, he's still making a great living. It's incredible money. And then you have much, much better talent around you.
Yeah. Jacksonville's going to take Trevor Lawrence number one, yep. Even though Urban Meyer was like, maybe Zach Wilson, maybe Justin Fields. No, they're going to go Trevor Lawrence, and that's fine. Trevor Lawrence, I think, since he's been a high school prospect, has been viewed as a number one pick. I mean, he's like that. He's considered to be the next Andrew Luck. We'll see. I mean, I think that's going to be a fascinating dynamic in Jacksonville. The Jets clearly going to be probably in the market for a quarterback. It is interesting that that they still have Darnold and they could ride with him, but yet the thought is they're just going to move on because new coach, new offense coordinator, they want their own quarterback. So naturally, they're going to be in the market for a QB. Miami will be interesting at 3.
Yes.
Because they have Tua Tagovailoa, and they also have Fitzpatrick. But it seems like people are going sideways on Tua already after one season. And then there's also the possibility of maybe they're in the market for Deshaun Watson potentially. So there's a lot of factors there. Atlanta at 4, to me, seems like a sweet spot because of just the Matt Ryan component. But
yep.
That's a new coaching staff as well. And then you got 5, Cincinnati with Joe Burrow. They're not going to go with a quarterback. 6, Philadelphia, new staff there. They still didn't even have a head coach yet. 7, Detroit, they got a new head coach. 8, Carolina, 9, Denver, 10, Dallas. A lot of interesting spots. That
Dallas would be sweet, Mitch.
Oh, I would
Dallas
love.
Dallas would be sweet.
I would love Dallas because the thing is, you get Zach Wilson with some playmakers at receiver, give him a good offensive line,
yep.
He will succeed. But if you have a terrible offensive line and you don't have enough weapons at the wide receiver spot, Zach Wilson will not live up to some of these lofty expectations that a lot of scouts and a lot of NFL draft analysts are putting near on his name right now. So, but yeah, Dallas would be sweet. I think Carolina would be interesting just because Matt Rhule, and I know our producer Dallin Graff would love that. They got a little bit of kind of a lot of extensive experience with college offenses.
Yep.
I like that element because I think it could be an offense that can be a seamless transition for Zach Wilson. I mean, he's going to be someone that's going to work his tail off and he's going to be able to digest a playbook quick, but I think it would be nice to have maybe similar verbiage and vernacular into an NFL system coming from BYU. So a lot of interesting stuff. We'll continue this conversation about the NFL draft here with some other BYU players. Where's Dax Milne, Brady Christensen? Where are those guys going to go? And also hear from a top NFL draft analyst on Zach Wilson and where he could potentially go. This is Cougar Sports Saturday. It's always powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. It's Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper here. We're talking about the NFL draft right now. Zach Wilson just skyrocketing. I mean, it's still mind-boggling to think. I mean, think about what's happened in the last year, Mitch. A year ago, life was normal. You know, a month and a half from now, the pandemic hits, and then we don't know if we're having football, and then throw into that mix a storyline where going into the season, I don't think anyone thought Zach Wilson would leave early to be a first-round draft pick, and now we're talking about him being the number 2 pick in the draft. I mean, this is one of the all-time stock rises in the history of the NFL draft, in my opinion. It's incredible that he's not only being discussed at number 2, I think he's honestly become the favorite to be picked at number 2. It's incredible.
It is. It's remarkable, Matt, because I think that Zach Wilson's a testament to his work ethic and it's the commitment he has to the game of football. I mean, that's the one thing about Zach Wilson is that these teams are going to find out if they don't know already, which I think they probably do, and it's why he's rising, is that this guy is so committed to the game of football. But it is incredible to go from a guy that was battling for the starting quarterback job back in August with Baylor Romney and Jaren Hall, guys are going to be competing in 2021, to now suddenly the guy that might hold the keys to the New York Jets or the Miami Dolphins or whoever it may be. It's a fascinating deal, and it's fun to see a BYU quarterback in this discussion and honestly be the big storyline of the NFL draft. To me, Matt, I think the biggest story in the draft coming up in April in Cleveland will be Zach Wilson versus Justin Fields, and if you want to get real creative, Trey Lance from North Dakota State. That, to me, is going to be the big storyline building up to April's draft, because who will be that number two quarterback after Trevor Lawrence? And it feels like the early lead is Zach Wilson. And NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah, on his podcast Move the Sticks, had this to say about Zach Wilson.
You know, I go back and rewatch more Zach Wilson, and it's just, some guys are just effortless. I mean, I have the soundtrack of kind of like easy, like Sunday morning, like when you're watching him. I feel like he just got done having a little turkey on. He went in the backyard, but instead of a Nerf turbo, like this, he's actually making these throws with like a regular football. It's just so effortless and smooth. But when you think about his issue, you talk about the fact is, I was told that he started the year at like 205, 206. He ended up in the middle of the year was up to 211. But the hope there is he's going to carry, you know, 215. He's not going to be a 230-pound guy. So there's a little bit of the frame there. And then you have the fact he's already had reconstructive shoulder surgery on his right shoulder. Because I went on a little bit of a mission over the last couple of days to find out why the huge jump, right? Remember last year with Burrow?
Yes.
We had those conversations, why the huge leap for Burrow from one year to the next. And we talked about the new offense and how it really featured his ability to quickly work through progressions, get more guys out in the route, all that stuff. So I'm on a quest to find out how Wilson made this meteoric rise. And a lot of it that I got back was, look, he wasn't healthy in 2019. He had reconstructive shoulder surgery. So when you watch him in 18 as a really young kid, they're like, all the guys who went through there said, we identified him as like, this is a dude, like this guy has big time tools. I think in the bowl game that year, go back and look it up, I think he was like 18 for 18. Like he was, he was definitely on the rise. So as a shoulder reconstruction in 2019, he didn't have all of his tools. You know, it was kind of frustrating for him. The offense was a little bit run heavy. So that's kind of the reason why you get what you get. Now he comes back fully healthy this year. And I actually told one of the scouts, I said, if he had reconstructive shoulder surgery, maybe he's RoboCop now, because it's a serious arm talent this dude has. Whoever that surgeon is, tip of the cap, nicely done. But that's kind of the concern with him is just, you know, durability. Can he physically hold up at his size? But man, he is talented. I mean, crazy talented.
He really is. And that was Daniel Jeremiah, sound courtesy of Move the Sticks podcast. Good stuff there, talking about Zach Wilson. And I think that's why you've seen that rise, because his natural athleticism, his arm strength, it's off the charts. And you compare and you combine that with his love for the game of football, and I think he's got good size. I mean, he made that a point of focus back in March last year when spring football started. He wanted to play with some more weight, because when he arrived at BYU, he was just a thin little kid. Now he's playing around that 212, 213. And I think that, you know, Zach, it's helped him physically in regards to moving up the draft order as well.
Another thing that's really exciting, besides Zach Wilson maybe going number two, which is thrilling, it's going to be huge for BYU football, is we're starting to see some other mock drafts come out, Mitch, and other BYU names are starting to pop up. Brady Christensen's a guy who we're really high on. BYU has been high on him for a long time. We know that Pro Football Focus ranked him just as one of the best college football players in the country last season. Forget about at his position in the nation. Brady Christensen's one of the best. He's a guy who's getting first-round buzz. We'll have to see how that pans out, but it wouldn't surprise me if he sneaks into that first round, because there's always teams at the end of the first round who there's no shortage of good offensive linemen. Like, one team that comes to mind for me with Brady Christensen, I would love to see him go here, is the LA Rams. That's a team who, they've got some offensive talent. They have weapons at wide receiver. We'll have to see what happens with quarterback. But Andrew Whitworth is a dude who, if he comes back for another year, he's old. I know he's been an all-pro left tackle for the Rams and the Bengals for a long time, but his playing days are coming to an end. Maybe Brady Christensen steps right into a place like the Rams and starts day one, and if not, you get to learn from an all-pro guy like Andrew Whitworth for one more year. So I'd be stunned if he's not taken in the first two rounds. I mean, I don't see a scenario in which Brady Christensen falls past round two at this point, and I think he's going to measure well at BYU's pro day. So it's amazing that BYU has come this far in terms of producing NFL prospects.
Yeah, and it's validation for kind of the the recruiting style that Kalani Sitake has incorporated into the program, where it's looking at a lot of measurables, looking and projection based. I know Brady Christensen was a guy that was recruited by Garrett Touche and the Bronco Mendenhall staff, but still he was developed at BYU under Kalani Sitake with MB and with Ryan Pugh and Eric Mateos and Jeff Grimes. I think that, you know, BYU, this is going to be a banner year, I think, potentially for BYU in the NFL draft. And to not have an NFL combine, I think it potentially maybe helps some of these BYU guys get elevated more, like a Brady Christensen, like a Dax Milne, because now scouts will rely more on the film. They're studying on these players will be a lot of film-based and interviews via Zoom. And I think that's going to bode well for a lot of BYU guys. You'll never have BYU guys raise questions about character. Now, I know that Walter Football had that piece, that slam piece on Zach Wilson, but clearly we saw Zach Wilson is a leader. He's a captain. You know, it's just like that was a hit piece on Zach Wilson. But I think that these BYU guys are going to bode well without a combine, because I just think that they will interview well, and I think they'll show out well in comfortable confines of Pro Day in the IPF, whenever that ends up being. So I think it's going to bode well. And we'll have Matt Bushman coming up here in the next segment at the bottom of the hour. Excited to catch up with Matt, because he was someone that, as we all know, I mean, he was going to be the star. He was going to be the number one, draft prospect out of BYU. If we were predicting who would be the number one guy out of BYU in 2021's NFL draft, it would have easily been Matt Bushman. Yeah. That's completely changed. But still, I think there's going to be a market for Bushman, because his film is top-notch. He's an elite player. He would have been one of the best tight ends in college football this past season had he played. And we'll catch up with him coming up next. So we'll take a timeout. You can follow us on Twitter at KSL Sports Texas, at the UCCU KSL text line 575-00. Former BYU tight end Matt Bushman joining us next here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
All right, welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. Hope all of you are having a fantastic Saturday afternoon. Appreciate you joining us to discuss BYU football every single Saturday here on KSL News Radio. We're excited about our next guest here on the program. He's a BYU legend, and now he's going to be pursuing a professional career, and he's doing great things, getting ready to do great things on the field and also off the field. He's former BYU tight end Matt Bushman. Welcome on into Cougar Sports Saturday, Matt.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Man, it feels like yesterday, Matt, that we were in the end zone of a rainy Lavelle Edwards Stadium, your spring game breakout performance in 2017, and now I'm calling you a former BYU tight end. It was a whirlwind, but now you're here, and you're getting ready for your professional career.
Yeah, it's been fast, and I mean, it didn't end the way I wanted it to at BYU, but, you know, just excited for the future and grateful that I could be a part of the BYU tradition.
And we'll get caught up this past season and all of that, but you've got some exciting things going on off the field that I wanted to touch on. You announced that earlier this week on your personal social media channels, the Matt Bushman Foundation, to help underprivileged youth in sports. Tell us a little bit more about how this started and what the Matt Bushman Foundation means and how people can help.
Yeah, so it started, I saw that J.J. Watt started a foundation in college, and it was kind of a similar, he started out super basic, found ways to like provide schools with sports equipment and new jerseys. And now that he's like a NFL prominent player, he's got this nationwide foundation. It's super cool to see how much it grew. So yeah, after like the 2017 season, going into the 2018 season, I was like, man, I want to make this happen. And I just realized that the legal work and all the paperwork is really confusing on that end. So I kind of had to put it on pause for a while. But after I got hurt and having time during the pandemic, I guess, I decided to find family, friends, and people that could help me with that confusing side of the foundation. And we got that all squared away. So yeah, I'm excited to launch it. It's just called the Matt Bushman Foundation. And we're just finding ways to provide kids with sports opportunities. And we wanted to keep it vague just so we can, depending on what city I'm in or what people are in need, we just want to find ways to help those kids. So we have a website, themattbushmanfoundation.com. And yeah, if anyone wants to donate, it would be super, super appreciated. And our first projects, we're targeting it in the Utah County area. Hopefully, we want to find ways to just get new sports equipment for kind of those youth correctional facilities and also youth rec centers in the Utah County area. So that's our first project, and we're excited to get going with it.
That's awesome, Matt. We'll make sure to keep plugging that as well. That's really cool. It's tip of the cap to you for wanting to do that. That's sweet. It's been a minute since Thanks. We caught up, Matt. I'll just keep it easy, keep it basic, but what have you been up to the last couple months? Obviously getting ready for the NFL. What does that entail? What's a typical day like for you right now as you get ready for that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was still, I signed with my, once I realized after I got hurt, that I was going to pursue the NFL, I signed a little bit earlier than the rest of my BYU teammates, just so I could get a little bit of a head start, I guess, since I wasn't playing like them and being able to put the film out there. So once I kind of dialed that in, realized I wanted to take that next step, I was just training and rehabbing a ton in Utah and then finishing up school, obviously. So I graduated, but now I'm in Arizona. I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona. There's a facility here called Exos, and there's like 30 to 40 of us athletes training for, we were training for the combine, but that recently got canceled. So the combine and pro day, just all that prep. And I mean, I have to modify things just with the Achilles recovery and everything, but yeah, it's been awesome. There's like top tier strength coaches and speed coaches and physical therapists. So it's feeling like a full-time job. I go in pretty early in the morning and finish around 5 p.m. and I just either I'm rehabbing, doing speed work or lifting weights. So it's been good.
I'm glad you mentioned that it kind of feels like it's a full-time job, because I think BYU fans listening, every time that a former BYU player goes through the draft process and photos emerge from, say, a pro day or a combine, they always say, man, how do they physically look so incredible? Why do they look like that at BYU? It's like, I got to imagine your work day has got to be, what, 9-10 hours of just nonstop training and working out, whereas at BYU, you got student life. I mean, you got community service. I mean, everything that goes into BYU, being a BYU football player. What does your work schedule look like right now, training for the most important job interview of your life?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, ideally in college, you want to start eating healthy once you realize, like, you're taking football seriously. And but it's just different. Like, you don't have the funds to do all that, or it's a different type of training, too. So for me, every day, I mean, I go in at 8 a.m. I do an hour of physical therapy before my workout. And then at 9 a.m., we have a speed work session where it's like training for the 40 or the 5-10-5 drill or the L drill. So just kind of dividing those up, just take like figuring out the super fine details on how to run those the best. Then we have a little break, but I usually go back to a little bit of rehab and therapy. There's position work, either before or after lunch, some days about 3 times a week. And then after lunch around 2:30, that's when we have our big lift. So I do that lift. And then after the lift, I run on the treadmill to do some more Achilles therapy. So yeah, it's a lot. And they know how to make it so we're not too sore for the next day. They keep us fresh. And also we have these awesome meal prep companies. So we're eating super healthy food every day. And that's the big difference, honestly, that I think puts all of the future NFL guys in the best shape, has us looking good. It's just hard to do that in college with the scholarship, but yeah, it's been awesome. I really like it.
I don't want to go into the past too much, and Matt Bushman's our guest here in Cougar Sports Saturday, but I remember watching your Deep Blue feature after the injury, and there were clips of you and your daughter, you being a newish father, and it really struck a chord with me. I had my first kid about a month after you did, and I'm like, I can't fathom what that must have been like to have that injury and then to have the highs of having your first child as well. What was that like? How were you able to navigate that? You know, obviously you were in a little cart there, so your foot was mobilized. What was that like? I don't know a lot of people that go through that wave of emotions in such a short period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Congrats on your kid, by the way.
Thank you.
But it was just probably the worst timing, to get injured for me, at least in my personal experience, like right a week before first game. And then I got surgery 5 days before our daughter was born. So it was like, it just added stress to the whole first time my wife giving birth for the first time.
Yep. And
yeah. I mean, I felt bad. Like as a husband, you can't do much when your wife has a baby. I mean, they're breastfeeding, or like they just have that bond with the baby. So on top of that, I was in this little knee scooter, had this cast, I had to be laying down a bunch. So I just felt bad not being like all the way there and being as helpful as I could have been. So I did what I could, but yeah, it just added even more stress to being a first time parent. And so that was tough, but it definitely was a good distraction from my injury. Just finding ways to help my wife, finding ways to help our daughter, and not just being so down in the dumps about getting injured my senior year and coming back for my senior year. There's like a big reason to be down in the dumps and sad about it, but yeah, having her there was definitely helpful. So I'm grateful for that.
He's former BYU tight end Matt Bushman, and he's kind enough to join us here for another segment here on the program. So Matt, hold tight. We'll be taking a break right now. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. More with Matt Bushman after this. Talk with former BYU tight end Matt Bushman, founder of the Matt Bushman Foundation. You can go to MattBushmanFoundation.com. Check out his website. He's getting ready for the NFL draft. And congrats to you and Emily and your daughter, Andy. It's got to be exciting to be a first-time father. And I'm glad to hear that's going well for you. And, you know, during this past fall, Matt, what was it like? I mean, you knew you were getting ready for the NFL, signing the deals to move forward and get ready for your professional career, but watching BYU have the success that I know that you were determined and motivated to help right the ship, because I remember last January when you're like, you know, we've had mediocre seasons, we want to change that, and to see the program actually do that, what was that like just from your vantage point to see it kind of all fall into place for the program?
Yeah, I mean, I knew we were going to have a good season regardless of the schedule that we were going to have. Like if it was the schedule that we were supposed to have that was super tough, I think we would have ran through those teams as well. Like we were looking good in fall camp and just all the work that we put in throughout the quarantine. So I was feeling super confident, and obviously I was proud of the guys for having such a good season, and it was super awesome to see. But yeah, definitely I had never missed a game in my previous 3 years. So it was super just bizarre watching from the sidelines and being injured. So it was tough. Like I wanted to be out there so bad. And, I mean, my wife and I, when we were considering leaving after my junior year, it was like, we prayed about it. We felt prompted to stay. So it was like, dang, what, like, why is this happening? And why am I not out there? But yeah, I mean, it's just things that you have to go through, and you just kind of have those, I guess, growing pains as life goes on. And I was able to learn just how to accept it and find the positive. So, I mean, I loved going to the games when I could. It was weird not having fans out there and just being with the guys. But yeah, I mean, I was determined to get as healthy as I could. So I was just really pushing my Achilles therapy as much as possible and just trying to find the little victories in my recovery process. And even though I wasn't out there on the field, I was, I don't know, just trying to be as excited as I could to every time they had a good game. So they had a lot of them. So it was a fun year for all of us.
Speaking of your recovery, and Matt Bushman's our guest for a few more moments here in the Cougar Sports Saturday. When do you think it'll be back to 100% and how has the recovery gone? Is it gone as well as you could have hoped?
Yeah. To answer your second question, it's gone super well. I mean, I always, before I tore my Achilles, I was like, man, that just sounds like a brutal injury, like super rough. And it kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies when I heard that people got hurt like that. But honestly, like the recovery hasn't been as bad as I thought it was going to be. My surgeon, Dr. Fox, did a super good job. And he said structurally, it's 100% right now, but I just need to get back like the muscular strength so that I can get out there and be cutting full speed. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm like 4.5 months out, but I still have a ways to go on full speed running. I mean, I'm running on the treadmill and I'm doing some like half speed routes and things like that. But I'm really hoping by pro day, I can do as much as I can out there. I'm going to be smart about it and not push anything, but yeah, I feel confident that I can run routes and be 100% or close to 100% by then. So that would be awesome.
How do you feel, Matt, BYU prepared you for the NFL?
Yeah, I think they did a really good job. I mean, you see the amount of guys in this class, in the junior and senior class preparing for it. It's they've done a really good job. I mean, in the weight room, the mental side of just learning the ins and outs of football, on the offensive side, just like learning about defenses and knowing how to kind of attack leverage and things like that. So I'm super grateful for BYU and everything that they've done for me. I feel like, I don't know, like I'm at that level just like of maturity that I can handle what is thrown at me at the next level. And obviously it's going to be a whole nother process where it's like a freshman joining high school or joining college where you're the little fish in the big pond, but you just got to figure it out and stay confident. So I'm looking forward to it and seeing the previous BYU, my previous teammates and other guys succeeding at such a high level gives me confidence that I can do the same.
It has been kind of cool to see, you know, Zach Wilson's meteoric rise of these projections. I mean, I know you guys inside the program always knew that he was a talented player. I think in his freshman year, I think he even said something to the effect like he's an athlete. I mean, he makes plays. Like when he was given those glimpses of moments back then as a youngster, has it just been kind of cool to see like all these guys that maybe people on the outside didn't think much of, but now they're becoming these prospects that are going to go in the draft, same with yourself. It's gotta imagine it's pretty cool to see that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just the jump that he was able to make from his sophomore to junior year was pretty insane and just shows how bad he wants it and how bad he wants to succeed on the football field. So super, super excited for him. And yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think if we were in a Power 5 conference or something like that, we would have the respect that these other teams get with NFL prospects. But it's just cool to see that with the successful season, so many teammates have gotten that kind of respect from, I don't know, scouts or whatever, that just showing that, yeah, we might not always play the typical Power 5 teams, but we have the talent at BYU to play with anyone, and we can push out NFL guys every year. So it's awesome to see the younger guys that did declare, Brady, Dax, Zach. Good for them, and I hope we all can make it.
Matt, have you been given any advice from guys you played with in the league, or obviously Chad Lewis is an easy connection there to someone who played in the league. Any advice given to you on anything you could do to set yourself apart and get prepared for the league?
I mean, I think the biggest thing, like, I've kind of learned about is there's a rookie wall where just rookies kind of get overwhelmed their first year, where it's like, man, this, you have preseason games and there's a longer season than usual. You have this crazy expectation, and where football really is that full-time job. So it kind of hits some guys harder than others, where they're like, man, this is a long season. This is tough. But just learning about how to stay mentally strong, and just like, I don't know, talking to sports psychologists and helping you stay as not only physically strong, but just mentally there, so you can perform at that high level for such a long time and adjust into a different reality of football where it's played at such a higher level. So I'd say that's been helpful. Just like, hey, like, watch out. You need to prepare for this. And I'm just doing the best that I can to be that mature rookie when I get there. I mean, I'll be older than most rookies, being that return missionary. But just having my play be the same, just trying not to have those rookie little mistakes, I guess.
He's former BYU tight end Matt Bushman. You can go check out his new foundation, mattbushmanfoundation.com, to provide kids with sports opportunities. And click that donate now link and help support this great foundation that Matt has started up. And Matt, we appreciate you. I wish you nothing but the best here at Cougar Sports Saturday. I remember that when you were a true freshman, you always spoke to the media during difficult times in 4-9, and we're always willing to just talk to the media. We want to thank you for always being great to talk with, and wish you nothing but the best in your NFL career. And we know it's going to be a successful one, because you're an incredible talent, and really appreciate all the time, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
He is Matt Bushman, former BYU tight end, here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Always appreciate the time to talk with Matt. More here on KSL News Radio after this.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Hey, welcome back in. Cougar Sports Saturday. KSL News time is 106 PM. It's Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. Big thanks to Matt Bushman for joining us on the program. That was a great interview with a former BYU great tight end. I do consider him that. I think Bushman is one of the best tight ends in BYU history. Honestly, had he played this past season, I think he could have made a case to be the best tight end in BYU football history. He could have been right there with Gordon Hudson, Dennis Pitta, the best of the best. His program's produced a lot of great tight ends over the years. So again, big thanks to Matt Bushman. We wish him nothing but the best here on the show. But bringing in Matt Biamonte again, Matt, along with great tight end history, there's a lot of great quarterback history, obviously, in the BYU football program. And whenever you get in the conversation of greatest quarterbacks in BYU football history, it definitely conjures up some opinions. And I put out a piece on KSLSports.com sharing my top 10 BYU quarterbacks of all time. And I brought this up because I feel like Zach Wilson has entered the top 10 quarterback threshold for greatest BYU quarterbacks ever. I have Zach Wilson at number 6 all time on my greatest BYU football quarterbacks list. What do you think, Matt?
I think it's a little high. I would certainly agree that Zach Wilson, with the season he had, being one of the best statistical seasons in the history of BYU football, highest completion percentage near 74%, incredible stuff. I just think, for me, I would have put him at 8. I like your top 5. You got McMahon 1, Detmer 2, Young 3, Wilson 4, Max Hall 5. Then you got Zach coming in at 6, and I would have put him behind your 7 and 8, Robbie Bosco and John Beck. I think Robbie Bosco, to me, is an easy one. He finished higher in the Heisman Trophy voting twice, won a national championship. I just think he had a better career. Zach Wilson probably had a singular better season, but I think Bosco had a better career, and I'd say the same about John Beck.
Yeah, I think the reason I put Robbie Bosco below Zach Wilson, because I think people look at that and go, man, he won the national title, but you know, Bosco threw a lot of interceptions in his BYU career. Wasn't always accurate. I remember, that 1985 season.
Hey, Detmer threw a lot of picks. You got him at two.
That's true. With Detmer, though, I think that's more, it was more the wins, too. He played some tough schedules. And I think that's one of the knocks people might have on Zach is he simply a byproduct of the weak strength of schedule that BYU football had this past season. You know, you look at a lot of these guys, they all had pretty, not weak schedules, because BYU's always punched up above their weight. Like, Zach Wilson's even got wins over Tennessee and USC, and on the surface, you would say, wow, like, wins over those type of programs, those are blue bloods. Those are great college football brands that Zach Wilson beat. I think, to me, Zach Wilson's just a better quarterback, plain and simple. I think that Bosco was really good. I don't think he had the quarterback competition nationally in college football. I mean, Zach Wilson was arguably, I mean, statistically, one of the two, three best quarterbacks in college football this year, in a year where there is great quarterback talent. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Kyle Trask at Florida, a lot of great quarterbacks, and Zach Wilson was just as good, if not better, than a lot of them this year in college football. And, you know, a lot of the greats, like the Jim McMahons, the tight end for Steve Young, Mark Wilson, I don't think those guys will ever be touched in terms of talking about greatest of all time. Like, that's going to be a Mount Rushmore of BYU football quarterbacks probably for the test of time, unless some BYU player wins another Heisman or wins another national title. Those guys will probably stay intact. But, some of the other guys, they just didn't have near the competition that, as far as just quarterback play, that we see in college football today. And Zach's arm talent, his arm play, the ball placement, I mean, he was just top shelf in so many ways. And his accuracy, the efficiency that Zach Wilson played with, I just think he's simply a better quarterback than Robbie Bosco was. It doesn't diminish Robbie Bosco. I mean, I think it's interesting too, Matt. You could go to a lot of programs and a lot of college programs, and especially even in Power 5 schools. Zach Wilson's one season in 2020 would probably make him the greatest of all time at a lot of schools. But at BYU, still at six is relatively low compared to what you would think, because coming off a year that he had, at most schools, he'd probably be at a minimum, you know, top two or maybe number one.
Yeah, that's a good point. I will say this, Mitch. Zach Wilson may be a better quarterback than a lot of these guys on the list, and he'll probably have more NFL success than everyone but Steve Young. And is Steve had a lot of success? He only won one Super Bowl. So there's an opportunity for a BYU quarterback to even surpass that in terms of hardware in the NFL. But when you think about top 10, I just can't let myself worry about measurables and arm talent and this. And I can only evaluate based off statistics and wins and what happened on the field. And it's whether or not it's fair, Zach Wilson didn't play anyone that good this year in his best season. And so when you're looking at some of the guys below him, John Beck had better wins. Robbie Bosco had better wins. They had better numbers throughout the entirety of their career. So, and I don't want to disparage what Zach did. I mean, to be in the top 10 is incredible, because this is a university that's had a rich history in quarterback play. And to even be in the conversation with a guy who won a national championship, to be in the conversation with John Beck, who brought this program out of its darkest moment and was able to get BYU back football back on the map like he did in 2005 and 2006. But Bosco and Beck, their junior and senior years, I think those combined, to me, equal more stats, more wins, more than what Zach Wilson did in one good year. And the thing that's interesting too, Mitch, is you look at this list and you're like, oh, maybe the top five is untouchable. Zach would have come back, and let's say they have a 10-win season, they beat Utah, they have a good bowl win, they beat a couple other blue bloods. You can make a case he's number three or even number two, but because he left early, he doesn't have quite the body of work as other people on the list.
Yeah, that's a good point. The one interesting element here, and again, my top 10 list, you can see the full thing on the breakdown on KSLSports.com and the KSL Sports app. Download that today. Number one, McMahon. Two, Ty Detmer. Three, Steve Young. Four, Mark Wilson. Five, Max Hall. And then I got Zach Wilson at six, Robbie Bosco, 7. John Beck, 8. Gifford Nielsen, 9. Steve Sarkisian at 10. You can text us your thoughts on who you would rank. Where would you put Zach Wilson at the UCCU KSL text line at 575-00? You know, he is the one guy on this list that didn't beat Utah.
Yep.
How much should that factor in?
Like, it factors.
I think it definitely plays a role. I think that, but I'm just like looking at it simply based on just quarterback play. I just think that Zach Wilson is just an elite player. He's an elite talent, and we're going to see a drop-off this year in 2021. BYU's got good quarterbacks waiting in the wings. They're not going to be anywhere near as good as Zach Wilson. Maybe they can surprise us. Maybe we could see a meteoric rise, but like Zach Wilson had this year. He's like to me, a once-in-a-decade type of talent. BYU's more fortunate than other programs when it comes to great quarterbacks. But Zach Wilson was just so good this season. I think that, and he played his first 2 years injured. Imagine what he could have been healthy his entire career at BYU and what he did this season. And when you talk about wins, too, I mean, USC and Tennessee. And also, I would put that Boise State win and the win at Houston. Those are great wins. I mean, John Beck in 2004 played a gauntlet of a schedule when he was a sophomore. We only won 5 games. In 2006, they beat TCU, who was ranked, and that was a huge win. But outside of that, there was still that question about John Beck of he didn't have, quote, it. He didn't have that it factor. And up until really that Utah game where they had the last-second miracle, and you could argue that they shouldn't have been in that position. They were a 10-point favorite in that game. So I just think that, you know, the dominance that BYU displayed this season, I haven't seen that since, I mean, BYU fans of the 80s, we witnessed a BYU team operate like teams of the great BYU squads of old, and we haven't seen that in years and decades from BYU football. The type of quarterback play, the dominance that BYU displayed, and you look at the recruiting rankings, BYU was playing some of their peers. They turned preferred walk-ons into NFL players at wide receiver. So I think that Zach Wilson belongs at number 6, but I could see the argument for number 8 as well. I think it's a good debate. I don't think a year ago, I don't think you put him in the top 10. I think you would say, you know,
no,
Taysom
not.
Hill should be in the top 10. Am I making a mistake not having Taysom in the top 10?
No, you're not. Because to come back to my point, you have to weigh stats and what you did on the field with the most weight, and Taysom just missed too much time, which is a bummer. But, you know, I'm just looking at Bosco right now. I mean, I think Bosco, man, is severely under. He had 2 back-to-back seasons with over 4,000 yards, over 4,200 yards, including a national championship win, and his career completion percentage is 63%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he did throw a lot of picks, but he threw a lot of TDs and threw for a lot of yards, and it's a great discussion to have. And one thing on Zach, too. The thing that is going to be so great about him being a first-round draft pick and being given the keys of a franchise is we're going to find out, Mitch, if he is, in your words, a generational type guy, or we're going to find out if maybe he was a byproduct of not a great schedule. So it's a real bummer that BYU didn't get to play this original schedule. Matt Bushman, you heard him a moment ago, and we'll put that that interview up on our podcast feed. He believes that team would have had similar results against the original schedule. He's probably right. We'll just never know. And so with Zach being a top pick, if he cranks it out in the NFL and becomes a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, then we can definitively say, yes, he was a generational talent at BYU.
I think you could say that now, though. I just think that
I can't go that far, Mitch. It's just the one good year with the bad schedule. I think he's a great quarterback. That's high praise, generational talent. I'm not ready to go that far.
I've seen BYU play bad schedules over the years. I mean, 2001, Brandon Doman played a really weak schedule. He was great. I mean, he did a nice job. But I've seen also 2011, BYU, the first year of independence, they played a horrible schedule. They won 10 games. The quarterback play was they changed Jake Heaps out, who was a former 5-star recruit. Riley Nielsen stepped in, did a nice job. But, I mean, I've seen BYU play weak schedules over the years, and I think that's always been a knock on the program is, well, they don't play anyone. Well, they're changing that narrative, I like to think, because independence, they're willing to, you know, play anyone, anytime, anywhere. I truly believe that with this program. They just got to get the chances. I think that, you know, I think Boise and Houston and UCF even. I mean, UCF, one of the winningest
UCF
programs.
UCF was a good team.
Yeah. Their defense, not great, but still, they shredded them. And I just think that just the dominance that BYU showed, and I think a lot of it rests on Zach Wilson. And that offense was humming this year because of him. And I just think that we don't see that often with BYU. I've seen BYU play a lot of weak teams over the years. I saw, you know, BYU struggle in a lot of games over the years against some weak opponents. Even Robbie Bosco, you could say he had the worst loss, too, of his BYU career, of BYU football history, the 1985 UTEP game. That played a factor in my thought process, too, in this ranking. So I think that, you know, Wilson, to me, I think that he will go down as a generational talent, regardless of what happens in the NFL. It's a good discussion, though. Got to take a break. On the other side, we'll talk some early look at BYU football in 2021. Who could be some of those guys that replace Zach Wilson and some of these stars? More after this. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. All right, welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday, KSL News Radio. It's Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. Show is rolling along here on this Saturday afternoon. We're talking to BYU football. BYU basketball coming up a little bit later tonight. 8 o'clock tip against Pepperdine. 7 o'clock pregame as the Cougars get ready for a two-game set against the Waves. Kind of rare back-to-back situation. Home tonight against the Waves. And then Wednesday, they'll take that trip to Malibu to face Pepperdine in sunny California. Ty Haw is going to be joining us at the top of hour number 3 to preview tonight's big matchup, which is kind of a sneaky, tough game. Pepperdine, a top 150 team in the net, pose some challenges, potentially two pros on their starting five, so that should be a good game. But we're talking some BYU football, as always, here on the program. And earlier this week, I put out a piece on KSLSports.com, and anytime you want to see any of the content we put out on the website, myself, Matt, Dallin, KSLSports.com, all BYU coverage humming on KSLSports.com. Early returning leaders for this BYU football team for 2021. And I kind of took a statistical look at this thing, Matt, as BYU's top passing leader, rushing leader, receiving, you know, tackles, things like that, basic stuff. And you know what? BYU loses a lot of talent from this past year's team, but there is a lot of quality football players returning to a team in 2021 that wants to try to keep this thing rolling after an 11-win season.
And I think one guy that you should have had on this list, Mitch, I can't believe he's not on here, is James Empey, who is going to be one of the leaders for the entire team, let alone the offense, to get him back. You think about losing Brady Christensen, just an elite-level left tackle. That's going to be hard to replace. But when you have great center play, because I think James Empey can be an NFL center.
Yeah.
And you bring him back, that is going to help. Seeing Tyler Algier in here, you could easily put Lopini Katoa in there as well. Now, Algier's that bell cow back, but Katoa came on strong at the end of last year. That catch he had in the bowl game might be one of the best catches I've ever seen. I think at the end of the day, you picked a good group of guys, and there's a bunch of guys that could have easily been on the list. Chaz Ayu is a guy who I think can really step in and solve some of those safety woes next year. You lose Troy Warner and Zane Anderson, but Chaz Ayu will be healthy. He could be a leader. It's awesome that BYU football has this wealth of depth where numerous people can step up and fill that void.
Yeah, they've got plenty of talent, and I think a guy like Isaac Rex, too, will be someone who is going to continue to thrive. I mean, you could make a case already that he's farther ahead in his BYU career than where Matt Bushman was coming out of his freshman season. But we all know Bushman was a freshman All-American. How Isaac Rex was not a freshman All-American is bizarre. The guy gets 12 touchdowns, and he's not a freshman All-American? Come on now. Like, who's vote on that? Let's fix that thing. But, you know, Isaac Rex, to me, will be someone that could maybe be a statistical receiving yardage leader, potentially. I think Micah Harper is going to be someone to keep an eye on next year at cornerback. I think maybe he could be that lockdown guy that leads the team, potentially in interceptions. It's been interesting the last couple of years. BYU primarily, a lot of their leading guys in terms of interceptions have been linebackers. Isaiah Kafusi this past season, and then the year prior to that was like Peyton Wilgar. So BYU's got a lot of stud linebackers. And, you know, some running backs that I think will complement Lopini, but also Tyler Allgeier, who's going to be one of the best running backs in college football next year, that I'm really excited about, that will add quality depth, and I think they'll find a way to see playing time and maybe push Lopini to be the number two, is Jackson McChesney and Miles Davis. I think Miles Davis is interesting. He came in as a wide receiver, but switched over to running back, and I thought the opportunities he got this season, he looked pretty good. And I think there's a high potential there with Miles Davis, the former Las Vegas native. I think he could be an interesting guy, and I love Jackson McChesney. Sione Finau, too. I mean, I love the depth that BYU has in that running back room, and they all pretty much return. There's no need to hit the portal this year. I mean, maybe if you want to get greedy, if you could get him, if you could find a Tyson Williams, go get that guy. But there's really no need this year. I think BYU is feeling pretty good at that running back room. Wide receiver, Gunnar Romney, I think it'll be interesting to see him be the clear-cut number one. But, man, if he can just avoid being tackled at the two-yard line or the one-yard line, the guy's going to put up insane numbers in terms of touchdown grabs.
There's one position that could use just one guy from the portal. It's probably that wide receiver group, because I thought Neil Pau, along with Gunnar Romney. Neil started slow, and you know, I remember writing in the spring, I felt like he was going to be the number one guy. That didn't happen. Dax Milne came out of I can't say he came out of nowhere, but he far exceeded anyone's expectations, and Gunnar Romney, I think, met those expectations that people had for him, and Neil slipped a little bit at the beginning and had a really solid second half of the year. So you got Neil and Gunnar and even guys like Cody Epps right behind there. If they could go out and grab a guy at wide receiver in the transfer portal, and there's some interesting names. One that I thought would have been interesting, Ty Jones, he ends up going to Fresno State. So there's some names out there, but I think that is one position where just one extra proven guy I think would help that group.
Yeah, I agree. If you could get a wide receiver and get a skill guy, it's always nice to get at least one skill player out of the portal every year. I think that should be maybe a rule of thumb. Doesn't always work out. You know, Tyson was a boom. Devontae Henry Cole was a bust. He left for Utah State and really didn't play much for
the
Aggies.
Bad decision.
Yeah, that not a great move. But honestly, I mean, he would have been buried on the depth chart, honestly. I mean, was he beating out Tyler Allgeier? Heck no. Was he beating out Lopini? Probably not. So what Kalani said in the preseason last year, that Devontae knew who BYU had in their running back room, he bailed. And that came to fruition as BYU's running backs showed out pretty well. I think another guy that I'm excited for at the linebacker room, because you do lose Isaiah Kafusi, who was the leader in tackles. Keenan Peely, who's the returning leader in tackles, coming back next season. He was the defensive MVP in the Boca Raton Bowl. But someone, if he can get healthy, he got hurt in that bowl game at the end of the year. Drew Jensen, who I thought was starting to come on strong, got that interception against San Diego State. Very high on the prospects of Drew Jensen, though. Got to take a break. On the other side, it's the top five. Let's see if I can bounce back and take down Matt if he can get his second straight win. Top five coming up next here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSL Sports.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday tonight. BYU basketball host Pepperdine will have that here on KSL News Radio. And at the bottom of this hour, hour number three, 2 p.m., we'll have Tyler Hawes to talk about that game and BYU basketball. So we'll do that later, but right now we got to shift gears to the fifth gear for our favorite segment of the show, the top five.
Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5. Mitch and Matt clash in a weekly battle of BYU sports knowledge. The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5.
Brought to you by Economic Partners, Utah's premier business valuation and strategic consulting firm. Need a business valuation? Contact econpartners.com. And last week, that was a close one. That was a thrilling, thrilling. It came all the way down to the end, and then Taysom Hill, for me, snuck in and got me my first win of 2021. Fast forward to today, and Dallin, as we bring in our producer, Dallin Graff, what do we have on tap?
Yeah, you know, we have talked a lot of BYU quarterbacks so far, a lot about Zach Wilson, and we're not going to stop here. We're going to keep talking about BYU football in this upcoming NFL draft, and as we talk about Zach, you know, in this sort of where he'll be drafted, highest drafted player ever at BYU's fifth overall, Jim McMahon and Ezekiel Ansah. So not only does Zach Wilson have an opportunity to set that sort of record for BYU, but today we're going to look at quarterbacks that have been drafted at number two overall. The last five quarterbacks to be drafted at number two overall, as Zach Wilson sort of sits in this position where it seems pretty likely that he could be the second quarterback taken in this draft. So today's top five, last five quarterbacks drafted number two overall in the NFL draft. All you got to do is name the player. Any questions? We good with that?
Ooh, this is
I think we're good.
This is going to be a doozy, but we're good.
Okay. All right. So we started with Matt last week. We're going to start with Mitch. Mitch, where are you going with your first guess?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with, so just number two overall.
Yep. The last five quarterbacks drafted number two overall.
I'll start things off. I doubt it's right, but Ryan Leaf.
It's a good guess. He was drafted over two overall, but
1998.
Yes. Yeah. It's a little farther back.
All right. I think I got one here. I'm going to go with the Bears' current quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky.
Yes. Great guess. The most recent, a little hint there, most recent number two overall pick at quarterback in 2017. The Bears actually traded up to get to number two. They were at number three, traded up to number two to sort of secure their selection there. He was the first quarterback taken in that draft in 2017. But Mitchell Trubisky, and up and down results so far in the Trubisky era in Chicago. If you ask Bear fans, they're probably not too happy, but still some promise there. I guess he's still on his rookie deal. But yes, number two overall selection for the Bears. Mitch, to you.
I think it's actually Matt.
Oh, honesty by Mitch.
Yeah,
I like it.
Taking an honest approach. Honesty shall win the day. After the feel-good stuff from Matt Bushman today, I have to be honest.
I respect it.
And I do want to say before I have this next guess, I would love for what happened to Mitch Trubisky to happen to Zach Wilson, where you can make a case where it makes sense for the Jets to trade down a couple spots, acquire some more assets, and maybe someone sneaks in to number two and takes Zach Wilson. I would love for that to happen to him.
No doubt.
All right, my next guess, and I'm feeling very good about this one, is, and Mitch, you should know this, it's a current Raiders quarterback, Marcus Mariota.
That's right.
Yes, great guess. 2015 to the Tennessee Titans, he was the second overall pick that year. Jameis Winston went number one to the Bucks. Number two, Marcus Mariota. Now, as you mentioned, Matt, no longer with the Titans. He is, you know, playing for the Raiders right now, so kind of, again, up and down for Mariota in Tennessee, had some big moments, playoff win, but ultimately they moved on to Ryan Tannehill, and so far so good on that for them. All right, to you, Mitch.
Let's see here. I'm trying to think. Man, this is tough.
Yeah, this is really tough.
This is a doozy. I'm trying to just think of these certain years. I'm going to say, Brady Quinn? No, he slipped. He went,
I think
20th
he went,
to the
he
Browns?
Was a he was a first-round guy, but he did slip.
Yeah, I think so. All right, Matt.
All right, I'm going to go with, I don't feel great about this, but let's try Carson Wentz.
All right, well, Matt gets it there. That is a correct guess and your third correct guess, so congratulations on the top five win. But Carson Wentz, yeah, another case where a team traded up to number two. Philly in 2016 was at number eight, gave up a big ransom to move up, get the second-best quarterback off the board in Carson Wentz. Jared Goff goes number one that year. And as you kind of mentioned, teams potentially moving up, this is another case where a team moved up to the number two spot to get that second best or first best quarterback. In the 2021 case, it will be whoever comes after Trevor Lawrence. But yeah, Carson Wentz. And again, kind of up and down, right? They win a Super Bowl, albeit he's injured. It's Nick Foles in for him. But up and down tenure in Philly so far and with the new regime. We'll see if he sticks around or if he's part of the future plan. But yes, number two pick in 2016. You've got three out of them so far, Matt. That's a win. That's a dub.
I'll take
it. Call that. Wow.
Hey, you know, as a kid, I didn't watch cartoons. I played Madden and NCAA and watched the NFL draft and watched SportsCenter. So some of these weird quirks as a child come handy in the top five.
I love it. We got two more on here. I'm going to give you guys opportunities. If you have any guesses here, we could go through these. If not, I will reveal the top five.
Let me ask this. Are these quarterbacks still in the league?
Not all of them. No. There's one that is no longer in the league.
One of them still is in the league, mm-hmm. and one of them is no longer in the league.
Yep.
Okay. Matt Stafford was a number one overall pick, so it's not Matt Stafford. Man, Mitch, this is tough. Anything come to mind?
Yeah, no, I nothing comes to mind. Who are they?
All right, so we have Robert Griffin III.
Oh, yeah.
Washington. Yes.
2012, yeah. Another situation. Washington traded up from number six.
After Sam Bradford.
Mm-hmm, to number two to get that second best quarterback off the board. Obviously, not the best situation in Washington with Robert Griffin III. And then Donovan McNabb, all the way back in 1999 to the Philadelphia Eagles. And ironically, he's sort of the last one of these guys that had a sort of lengthy, successful career with the team that drafted him. Everybody else has kind of, you know, it's been either shaky or they've moved on. Donovan McNabb, a long career in Philadelphia, got to a Super Bowl, multiple NFC championship games. So number two overall selection, 1999.
So I wasn't too far off then on my 1998.
Yes, Ryan Leaf would have been the very next one.
Yeah, so it was 1999 the next year with Donovan McNabb, who I want to say, he's good friends with, I assume, Chad Lewis, because they were on the team that went to Super Bowl 37, I think, against the Patriots out in Jacksonville. So I'm sure Chad Lewis and Donovan McNabb are pretty tight. But Zach Wilson could be in some rare company, I guess, when you're talking about things that span back over, 22 years? Not often you see a quarterback go number two. You see it all the time go number one. Not often they go number two, I guess.
Sure enough. All right, Matt, with the victory here, 30 seconds, what do you got?
What I have is an observation from the BYU-Portland game, guys, where and I don't blame BYU for this because so many teams across the country are doing this, but the fake fan noise was too much in that game. And I don't know if I have a better solution. Maybe you turn it down, but it was distracting from the game. And I think it just highlighted the need for fans back in the arena. And hopefully before the end of the year, Mitch, we can get 5,000 fans back in the Marriott Center. I mean, there's no way it's going to be full or even 50%, but even 5,000 to eliminate the need for fake fan noise would be such a welcome sound in the Marriott Center. So again, no fault on BYU, but the fake fan noise across all sports, it's not working out.
Yeah, it was very noticeable on Thursday, too.
Yes.
Like, look, BYU has gone a month without having a home game, so maybe they're just getting the kinks out. Like, got a little bit rusty over the month away. Like, there was a little bit more static. But, it was very it was not a clear, like, fan noise. It was very, like, computer robot sounding where it's just static. Like, imagine what static would sound out. That's what it sounded like. But, I'm with you. Hopefully, I'd rather just hear silence. Like, I don't need the fake sounds. Like, put it on the 50 or 100 friends and family that of the players and coaches that attend. Put it on them to create the noise and the benches. Like, that's all I want to hear. I don't want to have to hear the static. I want to hear the coaches screaming through their mask and yelling some play call. That's what I would rather hear. I'd just rather hear the natural sounds of a game rather than the fake generated fan noise.
And along those lines, Mitch, we had this conversation back in football season, but the Marriott Center is so big, you could distance 5,000 people easily. I'm sure there's regulations in place that are preventing that, but I don't know of a safer public activity than being socially distanced at the Marriott Center. I think that could happen very easily.
Yeah, hopefully it can. I mean, especially at least just for that Gonzaga game. Like, let's just call it out. It's like, just bring out the 2,500 for the Gonzaga game. That's it. Just get some fans in the seats for that Gonzaga game. Because everyone else, like, I think BYU can navigate. Like, they can handle that. And that's where we'll get to our poll of the day. You know, can BYU win out this season? We'll get your we'll get your thoughts. We'll talk more BYU football and basketball conversation coming up next. This is Cougar Sports Saturday. It's powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Hour number three here of Cougar Sports Saturday, rolling along. KSL News Time, 2:06 p.m. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. It's a game day edition of Cougar Sports Saturday. The Cougar Hoopsters are in action for a big WCC game. They're all big in conference, especially when you're vying for an at-large bid in the NCAA tournament. But this Pepperdine team tonight, they got two star players, Colby Ross, Kessler Edwards. They are going to be professional basketball players after their collegiate days are done. And it's going to be a good test tonight for BYU, who continues to, I think, make strides as a team. It's kind of come together as a group and kind of continue to find their identity as they move forward towards down the stretch vying for an NCAA tournament appearance. And we welcome in now our next guest here on the program. He's the all-time leading scorer in BYU basketball history. He's also an analyst for BYU TV. He's the great Tyler Haas. Ty, welcome on into Cougar Sports Saturday.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a big game tonight for BYU, taking on Pepperdine. It's, you know, it's a unique circumstance. It's going to be a two-game set. Going to play a game tonight here in Provo, and then coming up on Wednesday in Malibu. What's kind of some of your initial thoughts of this matchup between the Cougars and the Waves?
Yeah, I mean, my initial thoughts are it's a scary matchup. I mean, Pepperdine's a team with, you know, like you just said, two star players that can get hot. I mean, you look at Kessler Edwards, a guy put up 37 the other night on Pacific. They just ran away from Pacific. These guys are really, really good players and can be easily overlooked, right? I mean, I think everyone's perception of the WCC, it's like St. Mary's, BYU, and Gonzaga. There's a lot of good players in this conference, and I've heard Coach Pope many times talk about how Pepperdine especially might be, you know, the second or third most talented team in the conference. And you know, Lorenzo Romar, great recruiter. I mean, he's going to have his guys ready to go. And this is a game that cannot be overlooked. You know, Coach Pope always talks about how that next game is the hardest game. This game's going to be tough. They're going to have to be ready to play. And they got their hands full on the defensive end for sure. But they're going to have to play well offensively to beat this team.
Tyler, I'm glad you bring up the depth of the WCC. BYU goes on the road recently. They beat St. Mary's. They beat San Francisco, some of the upper teams in the WCC. And now it looks like there's an opportunity here for BYU to maybe run the table outside of those Gonzaga games. Just how much of a feat would it be for this team to do that, to run the table in the WCC besides Gonzaga?
Yeah. That would be a huge, huge accomplishment. I mean, you kind of expect Gonzaga to run the table there, but these gyms, these places, I mean, especially with crowds, I mean, usually they're really hard places to play because they're just different than any other arena you're going to see all year. But even without a crowd, you know, these teams are good and they play fast, they play up tempo, and they can get hot. And there's guys that surprise you on the roster, right? I mean, you'll have a scouting report where where a guy comes into the game shooting 20% and he ends up hitting five or six threes against you, right? And so you just can't let your guard down against any of these teams, and you got to stay locked in every single game. But BYU is doing that right now. I mean, you watch these games, and they haven't particularly shot the ball well, besides last night or a couple nights ago against Portland. Haven't shot the ball great, and they've had to find other ways to win, other ways to grind it out. You know, I was so impressed with that St. Mary's game, especially. I mean, those last 10 minutes, so locked in defensively, getting every rebound, every loose ball. You can just see the fire and the energy with this group, and they're hungry to fight and to win. You know, one of their mantras is turning frustration into fight. A lot of these games can turn into really frustrating games, right? Where you just have to grind it out and find a way to win. But BYU's doing that right now, and it's really impressive.
Tyler Haas is our guest, BYU TV analyst and former BYU basketball great here on Cougar Sports Saturday on KSL News Radio. BYU and Pepperdine tonight, 8 o'clock tip. You can hear the game here on KSL. And, you know, Tyler, this BYU team, it's a definitely a different type of personnel and with the roster. We knew that coming into the season, but it's taken a little bit of time for them to find their identity. It felt like last week was a breakthrough, though, when they win at St. Mary's, when they win at San Francisco. That toughness that Mark Pope talked about, it felt like that was highlighted. Do you feel like that's going to be kind of the identity of this team moving forward? Like, hey, the shooting, it's going to be inconsistent. It is what it is, but you can have the peace of mind knowing that they're going to find a way to grind it out and pull out a victory at game's end.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they broke through a wall that they've been trying to break through, you know, for certain times in the year. I mean, BYU's, they're having a great season, but there's been a few moments, right, where, you know, the scoring's not there and it leads to, you know, not great stuff on the defensive end. I think we saw that USC game, Boise State game. There were stretches where the flow and the rhythm of everything just wasn't clicking. And I think what this group has locked in on is stringing stops together and letting the defensive end affect the offensive end. Now that's a really, really hard challenge at any level of basketball, right? To lock in defensively, no matter whether shots are dropping or not dropping, to stay locked into the game plan, stay locked into what you're doing defensively. Those things keep you in the game. And they've just been able to find a way to grind through those tough moments. And then eventually, you know, when you're stringing stops together and your energy is flowing from that end, it just leads to really good stuff on the offensive end. And, you know, like you said, Mitch, I mean, I've been so impressed with the toughness of this group. It just seems like they want it more than the team that they're playing. And that's fun. That's a sign of a tournament team. And, someone that deserves to be playing in March.
Looking back briefly at the win against Portland, that first half, it was a little sluggish. They're only up six, and they have that huge second half, 58 points in that second half. Matt Harms has 17 points on to probably his best game as a BYU Cougar. What from that game stood out to you in terms of we need to replicate this each and every game going forward?
Yeah, a couple of things. You know, I feel like, one, like I said before on the defensive end, they're just locked in right now, and they're playing really, really well. But they found ways to go inside out. That was something that I noticed in the Portland game. And at times during the year, I love when we start trying to pound it inside, you know, to Caleb Lohner, to Matt Harms, Colby Lee. You start playing inside and establish the game there, and then it opens up everything outside and for the three-point shot. And you saw that over and over again against Portland. And so I'd like to see more of that. I loved seeing Matt Harms play as well as he did and have such a big – he always has an effect on the defensive end. I mean, his presence inside is huge, but – I mean, when he can be a threat on the offensive end too, it just opens up so many good things. And so I'd like to see that inside out game, but just continue this toughness and this mentality of fighting through the frustration. I love it. You can see it on the floor. Guys are fighting and want to win every single game.
You know, it's interesting, Ty. It feels like with this BYU basketball program, Mark Pope inherited a great program that Dave Rose gave him a solid foundation to work with, and Pope's doing some great things, and he feels like, I think, one of the more underappreciated, underrated coaches in college basketball, yet at the same time, he's never coached a game in the NCAA tournament. What do you feel like it's going to take, for this team to navigate this tough stretch of games, because the WCC is much improved? You're someone that's navigated this league and made it to the big dance, the last team to do it back in 2015. What is this, type of stretch that they're about to embark on? What's it like as a player? What are they going to experience as a team?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think back to my junior season, and we made the tournament that year as well in 2014. But there was a stretch in that season where we lost four games in a row. We lost first two games of the league, and to continue to fight and just take it one game at a time, right? You know, you have all the people. You know, family, friends, whatever. You see stuff on social media. People are talking, looking forward to March always. The challenge is to stay locked in to right now. And I think Coach Pope is so good about talking through, just what everybody's feeling. The feeling in the locker room, the feeling of each individual guy. I always loved, sitting down after shoot-around, Coach Pope always kept his door open and would talk through any of those things, and he can relate to it, right? He's played at every single level, and so I always enjoyed being able to relate to him and talk through what I was thinking, what I was feeling, and so I think he's been really good this whole season at helping guys through those things. But to your question, the challenge is to stay locked in and not pay attention to what everybody's saying and really thinking too far ahead to March. But it's just one game at a time and proving yourself every single game. And really impressed with BYU's first four games in conference, and they're doing a good job. But I think they're going to have to win out. That's what I think. I think they've got to win and finish right up there with Gonzaga to prove they're a tournament team.
You know, I was trying to think back, Ty, if there was ever a time when during your BYU career, if you had back-to-back games against a conference foe. I know the WCC's always had some weird scheduling quirks over the years. This year's no exception with the pandemic, but have you experienced that as a player from your career, where you had back-to-back games against the same team? What dynamic does that play, do you think, into this matchup tonight and on Wednesday?
Yeah, I think, the only thing I can think of is playing. I think my junior year, we played San Francisco pretty close to each other, ending the regular season and then going into the conference tournament. It provides a unique challenge because you just played against that team. You know what they're trying to do. You know that the game plan that they just came out with. And so, but really, at the end of the day, it's basketball. You're locked into what you're doing, right, and what you need to do for your team to win. Of course, you gotta know the game plan of the other players, what they like to do, but. Really, it's about what you're doing and the way that you play the game, your approach to the game, and so I'm excited. I'm excited to for these next two games. They're big challenges for sure.
He's the all-time leading scorer in BYU basketball history. He's Tyler Haws. You can follow him on Twitter at TyHaws3 and check out his work on BYU TV as an analyst. Ty, we appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks so much, Mitch. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Tyler Haws here on Cougar Sports Saturday. More basketball talk with BYU basketball coming up next. Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday. It's Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. Big thanks to Ty Haas for hopping onto the program, kind of setting the stage for BYU and Pepperdine tonight. It's a good game, folks. Don't underestimate these teams simply because of the brand. Don't fall victim to the college football playoff line of thought of, oh, just because of their brand name, that means they're a good team. Like Pepperdine, even though they're 6-6, they are capable. They're talented. Unlike Portland, who really wasn't that talented. Even they had some guys, though. They were halfway decent. They beat a Pac-12 team this year. Pepperdine will be a good test for BYU. How are you feeling about tonight's game, Matt?
I'm feeling like BYU is going to win comfortably by 10-plus. I think Pepperdine is talented, but BYU is a really good defensive team, as Tyler Haas talked about, and the Wave's current coach, Lorenzo Romar, he's 0-5. All time against the Cougars, their last time out, BYU won by 17. I think that 58-point second half against Portland, they're going to ride that wave, the Pepperdine wave, to a win, Mitch.
A lot of you have been voting on the KSL Sports poll today, and the question that we asked, and we posed it to Ty as well, is this the year that BYU basketball runs the table in WCC play besides the Gonzaga game? 63% of you say yes, 37% say no. Ken Pomeroy right now believes BYU will run the table. He's projecting BYU to win all their games between now and that regular season finale against Gonzaga. And as you heard, Matt, from Tyler Haas, he believes that if BYU wants to be securely an at-large team, because I think that's got to be the goal when you're in a conference with Gonzaga, you know they're probably going to win the thing. It is what it is. But you got to be number two, and in order to secure that spot, you probably got to run the table. And I think that
that's ridiculous. Sorry to cut you off, but I think that's ridiculous. If you look at BYU's resume, they're up to the 27th in the net ranking. Their losses are against teams that have had outstanding seasons. Boise State's a top 15 team. Gonzaga's number one in the country. USC, I mean, that was an early game. I think if that game were to be played now, BYU could win that. It's just preposterous to me that if BYU were to lose one WCC game besides Gonzaga, they can't get in. Their resume is good enough that they could, in my opinion, slip up one time and then lose to Gonzaga. That's just dumb. That's college basketball favoritism. And if you look at Kansas, they're in the top 20. They have four losses. They're 10-4. I mean, it's bothering me that's the narrative here with BYU, because this team, metric wise and the resume, is, in my opinion, deserving of top 25, and they should get into the tournament even if they lose to Pepperdine tonight.
Well, I think that it depends on which game it is. I don't think you can lose any game at home, even against the San Francisco and St. Mary's, because playing those teams at home constitutes as a quad two opponent. Now, the wins that they had last weekend on the road, because it was a road venue, there's more, you know, it's heightened value, if you will, made it a quadrant one victory. But at home, it'd be quad two. And that's what makes it difficult. It's just that, you know, these brands in the WCC, for whatever reason, they don't get the benefit of the doubt. They don't get the praise. I mean, this is a good conference. The growth of the WCC has been impressive, I will say, because there was a time, I think, you know, during shortly after Ty Haas' time at BYU, I thought to myself, man, this is just wash, rinse, repeat. It's the same thing. And it kind of still is to an extent. But the change has been that we've seen a lot more talent coming into the league. I think there's better coaching. I think there's more commitment from these WCC programs. And, I mean, it's the type of league that on any given year you could probably get three teams in the dance. I don't think that's the case this year, but last year it was definitely the case. I mean, all three, Gonzaga, BYU, and St. Mary's, were going to be, what, single-digit seeded teams? I mean, that's a good league to be in if you're not in a power conference. So I just think that, you know, BYU, to make sure, to not give any ammunition for the selection committee to give them a reason to bounce them, they got to win out between now and February 27th, in my opinion. I'm with Ty Haas on this. I think that they have to run the table the rest of the way out, because do not give the committee any sort of ammunition to say, well, you know, you got five quad one wins. Right now they got four, but, you know, whatever it ends up being. But you lost to San Diego on the road. Just don't give them that. Remember last year? Had they lost that game at San Diego, we would have probably been talking about them out of the tournament. But they had that alley-oop to Yoli, and it kind of saved the season. We all talk about the Gonzaga win, but it was that San Diego win that it was, the season was on the brink had they lost at San Diego. One game. That's all it takes to sink tournament chances when you're in the WCC. And with
that's
the
ridiculous.
With
that's
the
my
uneven
whole point.
Schedules,
that's ridiculous.
Matt, with the uneven schedules, I think they have to run the table the rest of the way.
BYU's played one of the best schedules in the country
up to this
point.
I'm with you, man. Like, I feel you, man. Like, it's just... It is frustrating. BYU, though, to their credit, they do have a good resume to this point. You know, they
great resume.
Their only losses are to USC, who I believe has only lost three games, and Boise State has only lost one, and that one loss was to Houston, who's in the top six of the rankings, and then, of course, the Zags, who's the number one team in the country. So BYU has taken care of business every way possible. And credit to Mark Pope, too. It's amazing kind of the forecasting he and Nick Robinson do with the scheduling, because they forecasted, like, Boise State, going to be really good. Like, we got to get them back on the schedule. Like, they've done a great job with figuring out who are going to be the good net ranking teams, and it's worked out nicely to where BYU's non-conference schedule looks really good. That win over St. John's is still a quality win. It's nice how those guys have – projected teams well, and those teams have lived up to their end so far, and it's worked out to be a good resume so far for BYU.
All right, we got to take a break here on Cougar Sports Saturday. On the other side, we'll continue breaking down this game tonight against Pepperdine with the three-pointer, and then we'll have a little two-minute drill, just a couple news and notes around BYU sports to wrap up the show. So don't go anywhere. More to go here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
All right, welcome back in Cougar Sports Saturday. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. Let's keep it locked here to KSL News Radio for emergency traffic updates and also the latest news. There was in the news report, we heard that, you know, obviously the passing of Larry King today, and it got me thinking, Matt. You know, I was telling producer Dallin this before the show today. Here at the broadcast house. Did you know Larry King used to go to some BYU football games back in, like, the early 2000s?
I did not. Wow.
Yeah, he was a brother-in-law to a former starting BYU quarterback. Do you remember this?
Brother-in-law to a former BYU starting quarterback. No, it just doesn't ring a bell.
It was Brett Ingeman. He was like a brother-in-law, and Larry King would come to some BYU football games. I think he was at the BYU-Syracuse game in like 2002, because that was when Ingeman got the start that year. They beat the Syracuse Orangemen back in the day. But, yeah, I always finding a way, Matt, to bring any sort of news into the world of BYU here on Cougar Sports Saturday. That's what we do. Here on KSL News Radio, so
and not related at all to this, but since you bring up Brett Hangeman, good thing he did not go on The Bachelorette earlier in the year, as that relationship has already fizzled out. So probably a smart move there by Brett Hangeman. Well, just a little dose of reality TV for you guys.
Well, wasn't the Bachelorette? It was Claire, right? That was the season he was going to go on, and then she just bailed on everyone. Sorry for the spoiler, anyone, but she just bailed.
Well,
she chose someone.
She chose someone, and they got engaged after, like, 9 days. Yeah. And no surprise, that didn't work out.
Yeah, what is that? Like, getting engaged in 9 days, like, anyone that does that. I mean, I remember I got pressured into getting engaged because my cousin, he proposed to his girlfriend after meeting her, like, 3 months. And they were 3 months dating, and then he instantly proposed. And I'm like, uh-oh. my girlfriend, now my wife, she's going to be expecting a ring here soon. Because I was like, yeah, I could take another year, a second year of dating. That's fine. We could do that. Nope. The clock was ticking. So all you people that just propose after 9 days, you're insane to me. You're nuts. Anyway, rest in peace, Larry King, former BYU fan for a little bit there. But all the latest news on KSLNewsRadio.com. We'll have traffic updates as well here on the station. BYU basketball taking on Pepperdine tonight. You can hear that as well here on KSL News Radio. 8 o'clock tip. Pre-game starts at 7 o'clock from the Marriott Center. No fans in the stands once again. It's just going to be family and friends of the coaches and players of the team. But BYU and Pepperdine, we roll out whenever we preview these games. We roll out the three-pointer where we give you some stats, some key players, some bold predictions for tonight's matchup. And we'll start things off with a key stat to watch. What do you got, Matt?
Mine is 1.66, and that represents the average blocks per game right now for BYU /center. Matt Harms, and if he keeps up this current rate, Mitch, it would be seventh best in terms of blocks per game in BYU history, and I think defensively he's been outstanding, and it's easy to look at his offensive numbers, and I think BYU fans, including myself, thought that he would produce more like what we saw against Portland, and that hasn't always been the case. But defensively, he's been steady throughout his time here at BYU, and that's going to be important, keeping Pepperdine away from the cylinder and out of the paint, and Matt Harms certainly helps with that. So keep an eye on Matt Harms defensively.
Not going to lie, it's fun when you see Matt Harms start to come, bring it all together, because, you know, Pope has called him out a little bit, like, hey, he's got to take on the role now of being a dominant force. He was kind of a rotational guy at Purdue. Now at BYU, they want him to be the alpha, be the top dog. He's a leader in that locker room. I think that's the great thing about him, is that he's a real good, I think, teammate. I think he's inserted himself into the program nicely. It's now just a matter of getting that production, because he said before the year, this is only going to be his 1 year. Like, he wants to go pro after this year, so he's got to ramp it up and continue to produce like he did on Thursday night. I like that stat on Matt Harms. For me, I'm going to go 0-5. That's Lorenzo Romar against BYU. Now, do you know the places? He's coached in a few different spots, Matt. Where has that record been compiled? Do you know that 0-5 record?
Hey, to be consistent with honesty, I do know because you put it in our prep sheet, so I'm looking right at it. So I'm not going to answer, but yes, I do know. Thanks to you. So
how
thank
about
you.
This? Okay, 0-4. He's been the head coach. This is his second stint at Pepperdine. He coached there in the '90s, so he had a game with Pepperdine when Steve Cleveland was the head coach. So he's 0-4 as the head coach with Pepperdine against BYU. He's 0-1 when he was the head coach at Washington. And that was kind of a recent game. It was in the NIT a couple years back. I think Bill Walton was on the call, I want to say.
It was in Provo, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good game. And I think that, I want to say Washington had a pretty good team. They had a former local guy that ended up going to the NBA for a little bit, Wilcox. The son of a former
CJ from Pleasant Grove, yes. Baby, represent the Vikings.
That's right. The former son of a former BYU great, and they lost that game. Washington did to BYU in the Marriott Center in the NIT. That was a really, really good game. But Romar just can't get a victory over BYU, and he's been coaching for 24 years. He had stops at Pepperdine, then St. Louis, then a long stint at Washington. Weird that they only played once in that time, because BYU and Washington, they got a rich history in football.
Was Dave Rice on the staff with him for a little bit?
That's a good question. I
want to say yes.
I think you're right. I think he might have been there for a little bit. I know he was an assistant, but I don't know if it was with Romar or if it was with the Jim Boeheim disciple that's up there now, up in Montlake. But yeah, Romar's been around for quite some time, and he's building up a nice roster with Pepperdine, so they'll be a tough test. Now, a player to watch in tonight's matchup, 8 o'clock tip. I'm going to go with Matt Harms. We just touched on it. I just want to see consistency night in, night out. I feel like the past two games, he's looked great, and I want to see this momentum continue to build, because come March, he's going to have to deliver big, and it could be a huge opportunity, a huge stage for him to make his claim that he is an NBA center, because that's his goal. He came to BYU for that reason, to get to the league and let's see it continue to happen.
For me, it's Big Rich Harward, and I got to say, before I compliment him, you know, there's so few people in the Marriott Center. We're lucky to get to go to these games and cover it.
Yes, we are.
And it's just a different dynamic with no fans. You see the players stretching on the court after the game. They sung happy birthday to some girl in the stands after the Portland game. And then lo and behold, as Coach Pope is on KSNO's radio with Greg Rebell, I see Big Rich come out of the locker room barefoot. Who walks barefoot on the basketball court? That's disgusting. I don't even walk barefoot in my own home. So, Rich, put on some socks, please. But other than that, he's scored double figures in five of his last six games. He's been a force off the bench. That bench unit is so good for BYU. And his emergence in the last, month and a half has really been huge for BYU. Because I remember at the beginning of the year, I'm like, Big Rich, I'm not seeing it. Where's the physical presence? Where's the domination? Well, we've been seeing it now consistently for over a month, and he's just been a shot in the arm for BYU.
I'd much rather walk barefoot on the Marriott Center floor than, say, a locker room floor with, like, showers.
You know he's doing it in the locker room floor.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing it on the hardwood.
That's why I bring it up. He says he's going barefoot everywhere. Like, he gets in the shower in the locker room. He's just barefoot. He's not doing the sandals at all. Like, he's not that guy. He's just barefooting it up. Like, hey, that's Big Rich. I like the guy. He's got a ton of personality. He's a fun guy to talk
to. Yeah, he's great.
Bold prediction for tonight's game, Matt.
I'm going to say BYU shoots over 40% from the three-point line. That second half, maybe I'm taking too much stock into it, but they really responded against Portland. They were 9 of 17 from the three-point line in that second half. Connor Harding, he's someone who's really struggling. He hit a couple. Trevin Nell hit a couple. Spencer Johnson hit some. I think that's going to carry over because BYU just has not been in their home gym in such a long time. Now they have that second half where they shot so well, and they're right back at it 2 days later. So I'm going 40% from downtown tonight.
I like that a lot. I would love to see that. For me, it's going to be in the turnovers. BYU, surprisingly, is 221st nationally in turnover margin. They've been prone to cough up the basketball a little bit. Sometimes there's been games where Barcelo has got six or seven turnovers, a little bit loose with it. I'm going to say BYU, bold prediction, they have less than five turnovers tonight. And I think that would be bold because, you know, when you got a guy like Colby Ross from Pepperdine, he can create some issues for BYU's backcourt. But I think BYU takes care of the basketball. I think BYU comes away with a victory tonight. I think BYU wins by double figures. I think that this is going to be a nice quality win. And it'll be interesting to see how they adjust coming up on Wednesday against the same Pepperdine squad. So that's our three-pointer every single week here on the program. We preview a BYU basketball game. And we got to take a break on the other side. We'll put a bow on the show and get to the two-minute drill. Any stories we might have missed here on BYU Sports, we'll get you caught up in the two-minute drill next here on Cougar Sports Saturday.
All right, welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Been a great show so far. Big thanks to Matt Bushman and Tyler Hawes. And if you missed any of those interviews, you can check them out on our podcast feed or at KSLSports.com. And be sure to go to the MattBushmanFoundation.com. He's starting that up. A great, great foundation there started by Matt Bushman to help young kiddos get into competitive sports. So he mentioned his kind of first project's going to be here in the Utah County area, so that would be much obliged if you could help out the Matt Bushman Foundation. We haven't quite named this yet. We can't call it the two-minute drill, Mitch, because that's what KSL's Unrivaled is. Maybe it's the hurry-up offense. I don't know. We're workshopping it, but we're gonna get it started anyway. So last week, I love this music. It just always speaks to my soul. It's a beautiful thing. The Saints lost. That was heartbreaking. Drew Brees did not play well. Jameis Winston did throw a touchdown pass, and there was like this conversation between Drew and Jameis at the end, and now he hasn't officially retired, but it's expected that he will retire, and now it's Taysom versus Jameis. Are you concerned at all that Jameis might somehow squeeze in there and become the starter?
I'm not concerned at all. I just think that all the reps, the practices that Taysom Hill has put together in off-season work. I know this year was a little bit different with the pandemic, but, you know, Sean Payton knows what he's got in Taysom Hill. He believes in Taysom. I still think it's Taysom time down in the Big Easy, and he's going to be that first guy that gets the crack to be the number one quarterback after Drew Brees. He's not just going to be handed the job. He's got to earn it, of course, but Taysom's going to get that job. He's going to be that starting quarterback. I'm not worried about Jameis. I honestly interpreted that little kind of reading the lips thing with Drew Brees and Jameis as kind of a way to give him some motivation, him being Jameis, because he's been a guy that maybe mentally has struggled a little bit with his career, because, I mean, he's a guy that put up a lot of stats in Tampa, yet he always just coughed up the football, and that's why he ended up in with the Saints on just kind of a $1 million deal. I say that lightly, $1 million deal. But, like, it's just like maybe he just giving him some sort of advice, like, hey, compete, go battle with Taysom. Who knows? But I'm still confident Taysom's going to be the guy next year. What about you?
Well, it's not a foregone conclusion that Jameis is going to come back, because Taysom's cap number for next year is so high that he's going to return. And if Jameis can go get, I don't know, a $10 or $15 million deal, I don't think the Saints can match. I think that they're in such a cap situation right now where they can't be throwing that kind of money around. So I think it will be Taysom. It'll be interesting to see what the Saints do, but it makes all the sense in the world, at least for next year, to go with Taysom and try and retain as much of this team. And in a weird way, Taysom being hurt, I think, helped him, because the Saints' offense did not look very good. You couldn't have told me that having Taysom in there to have a couple short yardage runs and catch some passes wouldn't have helped that team last week.
Great point. I think that's spot on, because Taysom's impact, the people that were giving up on him midway through the season, got a little bit silenced, I think, after last weekend, because, yeah, without Taysom, it was a different look, because he's just a change of pace when he's in that F position where he can be a tight end, he can be a wide receiver, fullback, wherever you need him. But next year, the Saints are going to need him at quarterback, and I think he's going to be that guy, and I think he's going to do as well as anyone can, filling the shoes of Drew Brees in terms of the impact on a community, because you're not only replacing a quarterback, you're replacing an icon
hero.
Yeah, a hero that navigated Hurricane Katrina, and he rallied that community. Taysom Hill is a guy that will, I think, continue that legacy of building up that community going forward down in the Big Easy. BYU basketball's got a big game tonight. We've talked about that, BYU and Pepperdine. BYU women's hoops was supposed to have a big game today, but unfortunately, it got postponed as Jeff Judkins' squad, who's been really good this year, 8-2, their game against number 20 Gonzaga got postponed due to COVID-19 protocols in the BYU basketball program. They've had four of their last five games postponed, so hopefully Judkins' squad can get back to action next Saturday when they host San Diego. That's 2020, 2021. It is what it is with the pandemic. It's going to happen, and hopefully they can get back on the court soon.
And it's a bummer because they have, you know, speaking of generational talents, you talked about Zach Wilson earlier. Shaylee Gonzalez is a generational talent, and it's just a bummer that she's not able to showcase that ability this year. And you know, another generational talent, Mitch, Jimmer Fredette. It's hard to believe it's been 10 years since Jimmer versus Kawhi in the Marriott Center, but it has been 10 years, and that was a night that BYU fans will never forget. I remember being in the arena for that one. It was at the end of that game, trying to get down to the floor. I was a fan then, wasn't a media member then, trying to rush the floor and get down there. I almost passed out. It was so hot, but it was an incredible, incredible moment in BYU hoops history.
Where were you sitting for that game? Because I was in the building, too, as a fan. I was, like, in the upper deck. I had to spend, like, $50 to be on the back row. Where were you?
Upper deck. I had a friend who bought a Rock Pass and then took a job in D.C., and I just inherited the Rock Pass.
Oh, nice.
And then that thing became so – I'm like, of all the years you buy a pass and then you don't go to any games, you missed out, man. That was incredible. It paid a price, though. You had to wait so long with the Rock Pass. I mean, 4 or 5 hours to even get in with that thing.
I remembered, like – this is a weird theory that I have with the student section. There was something magical in those tan, orangey, whatever color you call them, the mustard yellow. I don't know what it was. But it was like this, the student section sitting at midcourt on the base.
Game changing.
It was just, I don't know, like it had an impact on games. Like behind the hoop is okay, and I think the Rock has really grown in those chair back seats. Hopefully they get back there next season, hopefully at the earliest, I hope. Jeez, but you know, like it's just been a different dynamic having them behind the hoop compared to those Jimmer years where they were sitting baseline, they were in those prime seats, and they made a huge impact. Like it would just, it was you went into the Marriott Center and your dreams would die as an opponent. Like, no one ever won in that building. Now you still see some teams come in and get a few victories here and there. But, yeah, 10 years ago, Jimmer Fredette took down Kawhi and San Diego State, one of the greatest wins in the history of the Marriott Center. That anniversary is coming up on January 26th, which is Tuesday, I believe. So, cool stuff there for BYU basketball. Good stuff today, Matt. Big shout-out to Matt Bushman and Tyler Haas for joining the program. You can, if you missed anything, go to our podcast feed, and you can check out the show on the KSL Sports app and on kslsports.com. We'll be back next week giving you all the latest in the world of BYU sports here on Cougar Sports Saturday on KSL News Radio.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on kslpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.